getting a divorce, even thinking about getting a divorce, can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker, and today we're talking about successfully negotiating parenting time with your other parent. Now, if you and your spouse have minor children together and you're getting divorced, you're going to need to come up with a plan for how you're going to parent together. And that plan may or may not need to be filed with the court. And this is where many couples struggle. Part of the problem is that the concept of shared parenting is relatively new. People who are getting divorced now, who may have had divorced parents, likely didn't grow up with this idea. Another challenge is the language we use. While courts are now using concepts such as decision-making and parenting time, divorcing parents are still talking about sole custody and primary custody without realizing what these terms may really mean or that they're outdated. Not knowing what's typical or what works, divorcing parents turn to attorneys who can make the process more adversarial than it needs to be. So what can you do to avoid an unintended, unwanted, damaging, and expensive fight over your children? Well, here to share her insight and wisdom on this is Dr. Marlene Bizup. Dr. Marlene has an extensive background in psychology and has been working for 20 years with domestic relations cases. Welcome, Marlene.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I'm so glad you could come. So, Marlene, you were for many years a family evaluator. Could you share with our listeners what you did in that role?
Yes. I still am, but... I'm trying not to be a parenting time evaluator, and it's commonly known as a custody evaluator, but as you said, we don't use the terms custody and, those types of terms like sole custody or primary custody anymore. And so the term now is called parenting time. So I was a parenting time evaluator. And again, I say was, because the last couple of years, after nearly 20 years of doing that kind of work, I have decided there is a better way of handling this than the way we often do in the courts. What I would do as an evaluator is meet with each parent individually, meet with each parent with the children in my office, conduct a home visit to each parent's home with the children present, and that's where I would talk with the children privately and individually. And then I would gather collateral information. And this is information from outside sources. And after I had done all of that and gathered all that information, I would write a report to the court with recommendations for parenting time.
Right.
And what I found is if parents ended up in the end, when they're working with me, if they ended up coming to their own conclusions and their own decisions about parenting time rather than me making a recommendation and then we have a contested hearing, there was a lot more buy-in when the decision was theirs, than when a judge who doesn't know their family at all makes this decision.
Right. So that's a good point. And we're going to come back to it more. But before we do that, I just want to kind of go back a little bit and say, you get involved in those cases as an evaluator because parents couldn't agree on the parenting time and the court then orders this sort of investigation.
That's correct.
And
that is correct.
And it just seems like it's a really brutal process for everybody to go through because it just puts everybody under the microscope. I don't think any of us are perfect parents. We all have, make mistakes, but it seems like in that sort of environment, everything's being assessed and evaluated.
Right. That is absolutely true. It's really intimidating. And I tell people that when I walk into their home or when they walk into my office for the first time, I tell them, I know this is intimidating, just the process itself. Even if you're a friendly, warm, outgoing person, it still is a daunting process.
And what about children? I mean, how do they respond to being part of this process? Because obviously they know that mom and dad are fighting. There's no hiding that anymore.
Right, right. You know, with children, it depends on several different factors. Of course, their age and how the parents present to them who I am and what I'm doing. But there's also differences in temperament or resiliency. And even within the same family, you'll have children with different temperament or different resiliency. And so some handle it really well, some handle it not so well. But I think it is difficult for them because, as you said, they know that mom and dad are fighting. They're not getting along. They don't agree. You've got to have an outsider come in and take a look at the situation. And, you know, I think it's difficult on everyone.
Right. And so in your book, Contentious Custody, you say that in any parenting time disputes, the chances are that neither parent is going to get what they want.
That is exactly right.
So there's no winners in this.
There's not. Rarely will one parent get everything they want. And one of the things I found also is when judges decide, like I said before, there's less buy-in. But I also discovered that parents a lot of times don't even recognize that they agree more than they think they agree. And like I tell them, I can tell the other parent the same thing this parent tells them, and they're going to receive it completely differently because it's not coming from your now estranged spouse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the real beauty of it, and that's where I discovered people are closer in agreement than they think they are, but the process, and especially when you get attorneys involved and things like that, you kind of pit one another against each other. And if there can be a common ground, a common person who's bringing everyone together and making these suggestions to one another on behalf of the other parent, as I said, they'll receive it completely differently coming from me than coming from the other parent.
So I think I kind of just heard you say that when they go into the court system, it is an adversarial system that's, so it really becomes one side versus the other. So then it creates a framework for a win-lose mindset.
Right.
Whereas a better framework is one where it's not about winning or losing, but how do we create an agreement that we can both live with?
Exactly. Exactly. And along that line, what I help people do, I always have them put it in kind of this frame of reference. What you want to make sure you do is set yourself up so that you never have to make a major concession.
Okay.
You're not going to win everything. But if you can kind of rank what's most important to you and not fight about things that are less important, but focus on the things that are most important, then you don't ever find yourself making a major concession.
So can you give me an example of what you would consider to be a major concession?
Yes, yes, I would love to. I actually have a story that I tell that kind of highlights this point. And it actually was in my own divorce years ago. But for Thanksgiving, my son's father, I live in Colorado, my son's father lives in Kansas, and he would come out and they would go skiing or snowboarding on Thanksgiving every year. And I just never thought that was their tradition. And I could have said, nope, every other Thanksgiving
right.
is mine. I want my holiday.
That's a kind of a more typical arrangement would be to alternate Thanksgivings.
Right, exactly. But twice during the time my son was growing up, he's now an adult, but twice during the time he was growing up, my current husband's parents had their 50th and then their 60th wedding anniversary celebration, and it was out of state. So I asked my son's father, you know, can our son go with me? We would like to have him there. Well, because I had given him every Thanksgiving and never thought that, he had no answer for me but to say, yes, of course he can go. But, you know, if I would have every other year said, no, it's my Thanksgiving, I want my Thanksgiving, it's mine, I'm going to have it, then I'm sure when the time came that I needed my son or really wanted my son to go with us, he would have said no. That's what I'm talking about, making a major confession. That would have been a major confession for me.
Right. So, but Marlene, yours is with hindsight. What about somebody who's getting divorced right now? I mean, I think that people are often very fearful about losing time with their child. So how do you know what would be a major concession and what would not be a major concession if you're not,
right.
You know, you don't have the benefit of a couple of years of parenting separately?
Right. Well, at the time I didn't fight to get every other Thanksgiving, I had no idea these things were going to come up.
Right.
And I didn't do this perfectly by any means. I sure don't want to give listeners that impression, because none of us, like you said, we're not perfect parents. We aren't perfect co-parents. But you just have to pick your battles, I guess is the best way I would put it. And some parents want to fight about everything. And I just made up my mind, I'm not going to fight about everything. If it doesn't matter, I'm going to let it go, just knowing, and this is what I would say to parents now, is just know that at some point you're going to want something, you're going to need something. And if you set yourself up to not have a cooperative relationship with that other parent, you're going to find yourself making a major concession. So you just have to have that mindset that I'm not going to get everything I want. Let's give where it doesn't matter. And like you said, parents are so afraid of losing time with their children. But I would rather have fewer Thanksgivings, for example, but have them when they really mattered, than to have them all those years when it didn't make any difference. My son growing up had no idea Thanksgiving was on Thursday. He thought it was on Sunday, because that's when we celebrated. So, you know, you just have to pick your battles, and you have to realize it isn't that important. I loved getting up, watching the parades, watching football on Thanksgiving. I didn't have to cook. That was great. And you got to look at the bright side of things, too.
Okay. So one of the things that you talk about is you've developed a negotiation process that could be used if you're just getting divorced, but it can also be used if you've been separated a while and you're making some changes to your parenting schedule. And this goes back to what you were just saying about major concessions, but you say you want people to make three different lists. The first one is to list all the things that they don't really care about. And so when I was reading that, the thing that I put down is Easter. Well, I don't care about Easter as a holiday. It's unimportant to me.
Mm-hmm.
So when you make this list of things that are unimportant to you, the point about that is because you then know what you can give up easily?
Correct. You know what you can give up, and what you're doing, if Easter doesn't matter to you, and you're offering that to the other parent who may care about it, or maybe they don't care about it that much, but still you're saying, you can have every one as long as I can have one once in a while if and when I want it or need it. You're creating goodwill. And there's not enough co-parents who create goodwill with the other parent. They're more takers than givers. And I tell people, just give one more time, because I get parents who say, well, I give all the time and they never give. And I'll say, give one more time, because it's contrary to human nature to always take and never give. After a while, somebody's conscience will get to them.
Yeah, most people's conscience would get to them. Yes.
Yes. You've got that small segment of the population that, you know, really doesn't have a conscience, but that's a pretty small segment.
Right. So one of the other lists then is all of the things that are non-negotiable. So those are those are the big things for you. So I'm thinking, you know, a lot of this is around holidays, vacation times, but it could also be around, you know, the child participating in a specific activity that's important to you.
Yes. Yes, it could be. It isn't always a holiday or something like that. It can be, I want to be the one to go to karate with them or go to dance class with them or whatever the activity may be. Or it might be an activity you're wanting to do. Like, I've had parents who, the first weekend that hunting season opens every year, they take their kids and go hunting. Well, that may or may not be their weekend, but if that activity or event is important to them, then you're going to want to put that on your list of things that are kind of non-negotiable.
Right. And in doing this, you want to be focused on yourself. It's not like, I'm going to make this weekend non-negotiable for me because I know that my other parent thinks that this is important to him too. So you don't want to set it up as for a fight.
Right. Exactly.
And the third list is everything that's up for negotiation.
Right. And I tell people, really stop and think about what you put on there, because people will start out with very few things on there. They either really care or they don't care. And I'm like, there's more things that you don't care that much about than you're admitting. For example, the parent who never has gone to parent-teacher conference in their life. All of a sudden, going to parent-teacher conference is important. And I do think that's important. But if you're a parent who has never gone to that or never gone to a baseball game in your life and all of a sudden you want to go, or the one I get a lot is doctor's appointments. Almost always parents have an arrangement when they're together that one parent is the parent who takes kids to doctor's appointments. When parents separate, they all of a sudden both want to be at doctor's appointments. And I'm like, you've never both been at doctor's appointments before. This isn't the time to start, because it's uncomfortable for the kids. So you just have to weigh the things that are truly important and ask yourself, is that really important, or am I saying it's important because I don't want the other parent to have it?
Okay. Well, we're going to take a break at this point, but we are going to come back to that point because I think that that's a really, I have a couple of questions about that I want to ask you about. We all know how overwhelming and ridiculously expensive divorce can be, which is why I want to share with you an easy and convenient way to sell your engagement ring. Worthy.com is an online auction platform designed to help women across the country sell unwanted valuables like engagement rings in a safe and transparent way. Worthy.com provides complimentary shipping, insurance, and grading as part of their auction process. And the best part? Worthy allows you to set the minimum price for your item. If the highest bid comes in under that minimum and you decide not to sell your ring, they'll send it back to you, fully insured and at no loss to you. Worthy doesn't make any money on the sale unless you do. And in an industry with so much markup and barely any regulation, it's great to have a company like Worthy protecting your interests and guiding you through the process of selling old jewelry. Are you ready to turn your ring into a new adventure? Join the many women who are moving forward and renewing themselves. You can go back to school, pay off your debts, and even go on a fun getaway with the money you get from selling your ring on Worthy.com. Get the fresh start you deserve. Thank you for joining us today. Today we're talking about successfully negotiating parenting time with your other parent, which can be a minefield. And here to guide us through those obstacles is Dr. Marlene Bizub. She's passionate about teaching separating and divorcing parents how to avoid contention and arrive at mutual agreement. And she really thinks that those agreements are much better if you can make them yourselves rather than have a court make them. Marlene, you have a book, Contentious Custody. Would you like to share with our listeners a little bit about the book and what they could gain from it?
Yes. It came out in January of this year, 2017. It's called Contentious Custody. Is it really in the best interest of your children? because often we forget about our children in this process. And that's really how custody issues become so contentious, is parents are focusing on one another instead of focusing on the children. And I often tell them from the very beginning, when they first come in my office to work with me, the first thing I'll tell them is focus on your children. If you can focus on your children, stop being angry at the other parent just for a minute. Everyone has their right to be angry about things that have happened. And a lot of times people have real justification for feeling that way towards the other parent. But if they can focus away from that just long enough to focus on the needs of their children, we're not going to have any problems. It's when they get locked into this battle of, I'm still angry at you, I'm going to make sure you don't get what you want, then that's when we have problems, and that's when it becomes contentious.
Right, right. So listeners, Marlene's book's got some great tips in it. I really recommend that you check it out. Marlene, I want to go back. Before our break, you were just talking about all the lists, all the three lists that you tell people to make, the things that they don't care about, the things that are non-negotiable, and all the things that are up for negotiation. And I think, you know, part of trying to make those lists is about going about your daily activities with the children, and as something happens, think, oh, yes, okay, so teacher conferences, I wonder where that falls on my list, and starting to sort of, that would help you think through and identify some of those things, and then you have to decide which list to put them on. You had said, like, for parents who've never attended, like, never been to doctor's appointments or never attended teacher conferences, that maybe you see them thinking that now is the time that those suddenly become important. And I get that that's frustrating for the other parent, but I also see parents who are separating recognizing that this is a wake-up call, that they have to step up and they have to be a better parent than they've been. And that applies to us all. So,
yes, absolutely. So I don't disagree with what you're saying at all. In fact, at this time, at this particular time when parents are separating, everything in their life is going to change. So you might have been the parent that stayed home and took care of the children. And the other parent might have been the parent who worked two jobs so that you could stay home. Well, all of that's going to change. And if you were the stay-at-home parent, you might not be able to stay home anymore. You might have to go to work at least part-time. And if you were the parent who worked two jobs, you may not need to work two jobs any longer.
Or you may not be able to if you're going to parent your children.
Exactly. That's right, because you've got to be there for them. But at this particular time, you touched on a really important point. At this particular time, the court will give parents the opportunity to step up and be an involved parent. So that's the beauty of it. The problem is when parents decide, I want to be at every doctor's appointment. What I tell them is, it's great if you want to be at doctor's appointments now, because now you can. But let's alternate. Let's don't both go to everyone. Alternate. Take turns. Because it's uncomfortable for everyone, especially the children. If you're both there, it's tense, it's uncomfortable, nobody's enjoying the experience. But the fact that maybe a dad that never went before wants to go, that's great. Just alternate going.
Right. And certainly, you can't require, say, I have to be at every appointment and then make it difficult to schedule appointments, because that then means that the child is not getting the treatment and the care that they need, because it keeps getting delayed.
That's correct. Yes. Yes, that is correct. Some of it is just practical matters. You know, it's just an issue of practicality rather than, you know, I want to be there, but I can't ever be there. And so it never happens. You know, that isn't good either. Or the care gets delayed because the parent can't be there.
Right.
So I try to work with parents on being practical. And again, this is where focusing on the kids and not on each other comes into play.
So Marlene, you also, in your book, I think it was, or maybe on in the video on your website, you talk about being an evaluator, and in Colorado sets out 9 factors that have to be considered when you're trying to create your recommendations for parenting time. And
yes.
You've said one of the there are 3 of those factors that you consider to be perhaps more important, or things that parents should focus on more. And the first one, which touches on what we were just talking about, is the ability to put your children's needs above your own.
Yes.
So can you give me an example of how you've seen that play out? Maybe an example of parents not doing that you've run across?
Yes. Yes. Actually, I have a case I had just a few years ago. The dad wasn't home in the evening. He worked out of town. And when he'd get home, it would be 10 o'clock at night, and he would leave again at 5 the next morning. And the kids were basically being raised by his wife, his new wife. Well, they didn't get along with his wife. Mom was available, and the kids loved dad, but they just didn't get along with the new wife. And they wanted to be with mom if dad wasn't going to be there. And dad said no. He insisted on having his time. That's my time, and I'm going to insist on having it. And the sad end to that story is it was a judge who had to tell dad exactly what we're talking about. You aren't able to place the needs of your children above your own. You're more worried about having your parenting time. And there's a reason for that, too, which we can talk about in a minute. But the judge said, you're too worried about having your time than how your children feel and their needs. And so he cut dad's time back to every other weekend. And in this day and age, that's tragic. We don't like one parent to be only a recreational parent and not a responsibility parent, which is what they become when they only have weekends.
Right. So this is it's an important ability for any of us to look at ourselves and what we're asking for in our parenting time and saying, am I putting my children's needs above my own? But just to be devil's advocate here, Marlene,
yes.
Where's the line on that? Does the child always come first? Aren't we in danger of raising children who feel entitled because they've always been put first?
Well, yes, if you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
Okay.
I totally agree with you. Sometimes we do it for the wrong reasons. So if kids are just wanting what they want, in fact, I had a couple of teenage girls a few years ago who kept saying they wanted more time with their mom, but what they really wanted was mom had a later curfew on the weekends, and that was what they really wanted, was to be with mom where they had a later curfew. So when you look at the reasons why they want what they want and what it is they're really after, you can make a better determination of what's best for them. With the children that I was talking about, they really didn't get along with stepmom, and stepmom really didn't have a desire to parent. And the reason dad wanted them there is, and this is what I was alluding to earlier, that there's reasons parents want what they want. Child support is tied to overnights.
Yes.
And so dad wanted those overnights because it reduced his child support. But his wife had no interest in parenting these kids. She wouldn't help with homework. You know, so you can see when it's a kid just wanting what they want, or when it's a child who really is not being attended to like they should be.
Right, right. Well, thank you. That's a good insight there, Marlene. So just, I'm going to talk more about child support in a minute, but I wanted to say one of your other criteria was the ability to foster the love and sharing of time with the other parent. So, and I think of that in terms of your example that we talked about earlier of saying Thanksgiving is not important to me. It's an important time for my son to be with his dad, to go snowboarding. It's an activity. It's a tradition. I can support that. I mean, that to me is a great example of how you really tell your child and send your child the message that the other parent being in their life is important to you.
Yes. Well, and again, we're often angry at the end of the divorce, or we might now really be focusing on our ex-spouse's faults or shortcomings. And what we overlook is children are always going to love, or most of the time, I can't say always, going to love that other parent regardless. That's their parent. And especially when they're really young, they derive their identity from their parents. They don't have an identity of their own when they're 4, 5, 6, you know. They get their derive their identity from their parents. So when you put down a parent, you're putting down that child, and you don't even realize it. And that's the real danger, is when you're putting down your child, you're destroying their self-esteem, thinking you're putting down the other parent.
Right. Right. So then the flip side to that then is the ability to foster the love.
Yes.
Of the child. Yes. With the other parent. So
yes, you just have to know that they love them regardless, and you have to uphold that. And if there's issues or problems, address the issues. But right. You have to uphold how your children feel about that other parent.
And loving that other parent doesn't mean that they love you less.
Right. That's right. That's such a good point. Because sometimes we feel that way. If they love them, they must love me less. And that's so not true.
So you also have your third point is the ability to keep the children out of the conflict. And you have a wonderful example. I wondered if you'd share with our listeners of a young girl who actually wanted to stay involved in the conflict.
Yes, she did. This was an 11-year-old girl, and she had 2 8-year-old twin sisters. And she had become parentified not only in that she was taking care of her sisters, but she was taking care of mom and dad. And I brought mom and dad in, and I said, your daughter knows everything you're doing, because both of them were doing things they shouldn't have been doing. And I said, she knows everything you're doing. She knows about the affairs you're having. She knows about the dart league that you go to at a bar where you drink and then come home. And she doesn't need to know all this. She's 11. Well, they got it. They understood. And it was a wake-up call for them. But when we brought her in to tell her, your parents aren't going to tell you everything anymore, she did not like hearing that. And I will never forget, she grabbed hold of the arms of the chair, leaned over and looked at me defiantly. And she said, but I need to know what's going on with my parents. I need to know. And I said, no, you don't. You need to be allowed to be a kid. I want you to worry about who you're going to ride bikes with when you get home, or who you're going to Facebook with, even though you're not old enough to have a Facebook page. I know they do. So, you know, I really drive that point home, is I want you to worry about kid things, maybe your homework that you have tonight, but not your mom and your dad. And they don't always like that. But there is a wonderful ending to this story, and I'm not the hero here. It's really the parents. This girl came in 5 years later when she was 16, and she said, I don't know if you remember me. And I said, oh, yes, I remember you. And she said, you worked with my family several years ago, and I hated you when you worked with us. And I said, yeah, I know that too. You become well aware of that when they don't like you or don't like your presence in their life. And she said, but I just wanted to thank you because you were the only one who let me be a kid. And the real people who let her be a kid was mom and dad. I wasn't there, you know. I just let them to see that that's what they needed to do. But they get all the credit because they did see it. They got it.
Right. And that's a wonderful story, a wonderful outcome, and good for those parents. Hey, we're almost up on time, Marlene. But
okay.
I did just want to go back to the issue that you had raised about sometimes parenting time is the push for parenting time is financially motivated, and it's because of child support calculations. Can you give our listeners tips on, one, how do you know when that's happening? And two, what can you do about it?
Well, it's pretty easy to see when that's happening, because just like the dad who wasn't home in the evening, he still insisted on his wife having that time. They didn't get along. I mean, it was pretty obvious what was going on there.
Okay.
But what to do about it is much harder, because you're always going to have parents who are motivated by money.
Right.
So the only thing that I can say is I try to get them in to discuss parenting time before we look at financials, before they know what the outcome is going to be after plugging in those numbers.
Right.
Because it's done by formula. Child support, I know you know because you're a financial expert, but child support is done by formula and plugging in numbers. And if I can talk to the parents first, before we know what those numbers are going to be, it's a lot easier to find out what it is they want for their children, that they truly want, and not just say they want because it's going to raise or lower the child support.
Right, right. That's a good point.
Yeah.
And I have had situations where we've actually been able to agree to calculate child support on a different number of overnights than what is actually happening. I have a case right now where the child is in high school and has his he has a sports schedule that really, and because dad lives some distance away from the high school, it's just not practical for the child to be overnight with dad during the week. So mom and dad are talking about having more of a flexible parenting time, but the parenting plan is going to say, you know, child will spend every other weekend with dad, but the mom and dad agree to calculate child support as if child is spending 50-50.
Yes. Yes. And parents can do things like that too. As long as the court doesn't feel it's unconscionable to the child, they can make those kinds of adjustments and agree to it. And, you know, good for those parents that they agreed to do that.
Great. Marlene, I'm sorry we're out of time, and I know we could talk for a lot longer. Do you have one last tip for our listeners?
The last thing, two things I would say real quickly is, one is the single greatest threat of harm for your children is exposure to your conflict. So before you fight about everything, keep in mind that it's the fighting, not whatever you're fighting about, that is harmful to the children. And then the second thing I would say is just my tagline, and that is, love your children more than you hate your ex. And if you can do that, you've got it made.
Oh, and that's a great, great tagline. Thank you so much, Marlene, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, my guest for this conversation is Dr. Marlene Bizab. Dr. Marlene, you can find out more about her at her website, marlenebizab.com. That's Marlene, MarlenBizub.com. And do check out her website and her book, Contentious Custody. My request to you is just to take these things step by step. Invest the time to understand the legal framework and the terminology where you are. Using words like primary parent may be unnecessary triggers to your other parent and may make this whole discussion about parenting time a lot more difficult than it needs to be. And if your other parent is the one who's using scary terms, then don't overreact yourself. Do your research and sit down and ask them, you know, exactly what do you mean when you say primary parent? So to educate yourself, then always, like Marlene was saying, try to come up with an agreement on your own. Using a third party facilitator may help. Any agreement you're able to reach, I guarantee you, will be better for your family than fighting this out in court. And remember, parenting agreements have to change over time. They have to flex with the needs of your children. So above all, this is about creating a plan around the needs of your children rather than your needs or your other parent's needs. Again, thank you for listening. Remember, check out my blog at sincemydivorce.com. You'll find a synopsis of the show there, and I hope you'll join us again for more conversations about divorce. I'm Mandy Walker.